Carol G.
Juan Gabriel.
Christina Aguilera.
What do these three have in common?
You mean apart from impeccable style, chart-topping canciones, and drama?
Facts, yes, all of the above are correct, but most importantly, they're some of the biggest Latin icons in the world. And they're just a few of the game-changing Latin stars we're covering in Becoming an Icon Season 2. Listen to Becoming an Icon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Rough opening to the fantasy playoffs. Let's talk to the pros. Hello, everybody, and welcome into another episode of the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. My name is Ryan Wormley. Joining me today, as always, is Fantasy Pros analyst Kyle Yates. Yates, how did the opening round of the fantasy... I can't even get the question out without laughing. How did the opening round of the fantasy playoffs treat you?
Well, let's just say this. Not well. I was just talking to our guest before we started recording that my team that was absolutely stacked in the Sleeper Bowl, guys like Alvin Kamara, Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, Hunter Renfro. I mean, this team was looking like it was going to absolutely run away with the championship. I have yet to cross over 60 points on the week, and I have Daryl Henderson left to play. That's all I got. So absolutely, absolutely terrible. I'm going to get bounced by AJ Dillon, of all people, in the first round of the fantasy playoffs. It feels great.
Yeah, that's not what you want, as the kids say. Also joining us today is Matt Hicks from the Rookie Big Board YouTube channel and podcast. Matt, were you one of the few to survive week 15?
You know, I got some teams that made it through, but overall, I feel like we all felt like the Chicago Bears last night, just the fantasy football version.
Well, I think we probably, a lot of people felt like the Bears. I think a lot of people probably felt like the Vikings or the Raiders for the other Monday night game, in that you didn't score a whole lot, but at least you sort of made it through, just survived to live another week. As always, I want to make sure that the listeners can find the three of us online. Yates' Twitter handle is at KyleYNFL. Matt is at @theff_educator. And I can be found at Ryan Wormley. Wormley, like how you dress when it's cold outside. And of course, we can be found everywhere at Fantasy Pros. I do just want to mention before we get into the show that we are having some technical issues with the audio. So if we're coming in echoey or soft or distorted, particularly my mic, that is why. Throughout this December, we are going to be giving you guys a sampling of some Dynasty content each Tuesday on this podcast. But if you yearn for even more in-depth Dynasty content, then please check out the Fantasy Pros Dynasty Football Podcast, hosted by none other than Kyle Yates. Each week, he and a guest will share their thoughts on next year's free agent class, their dynasty rankings entering the offseason, the 2022 rookie class, and so much more. So check out the Fantasy Pros Dynasty Football Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. And I also want to quickly mention our giveaway that we have going on right now, which is a free signed Alvin Kamara jersey. All you have to do to be entered to win is head to fantasypros.com/contest and submit a screenshot of you subscribed to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros. Step three is just cross your fingers and hope that you win. It's that simple.
Monday Night Football Recap.
Fellas, let's jump into a double Monday Night Football night for obvious reasons with COVID going on. Let's start with the first game Raiders at Browns. And I should say, there's not going to be a whole lot to talk about with either of these games because neither of these games went over a combined 30 points. So there wasn't a ton of fantasy takeaway here, but 16-14 Raiders win on the last second field goal. Let's start with the Raiders. Josh Jacobs, 15 rushing attempts, 52 yards, only a long of 9. Derek Carr, 25 of 38, 236 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. Again, none of these lines really jump out to you. Yates, who sticks out to you most from the Raiders box score?
I think we have to talk about Hunter Renfrow, because Renfrow was the guy that was just dominating through the past few weeks there, where we looked at Renfrow as kind of a safe option moving into week 15. And there were a lot of players that we viewed as a safe option in week 15, and that did not happen. And Renfrow was one of them, right, where we thought that he was going to be a mid-range wide receiver too, potentially even a top 12 option. But what you saw with Cleveland was they were just like, we'll double team Hunter Renfrow. He was getting the Calvin Johnson treatment, right? We'll double team Hunter Renfrow and make Derek Carr beat us somewhere else. And it didn't really happen that much. So yeah, that's the big thing here, where Renfrow, we thought we had a very, very high floor and some upside too. And that just did not come to fruition this past week.
Yeah. Interesting that even with Renfrow, obviously, again, if you're getting doubled, you're going to look elsewhere, but they didn't try to force feed him the ball, even though he's been, without Darren Waller on the field, by far their most effective receiver. Just 5 targets on the night. You know, Zay Jones, 9 targets, Moreau, 9 targets. So Derek Carr was definitely looking elsewhere. Matt, did any of those other guys stand out to you as potentially viable fantasy options here in the fantasy playoffs besides Renfrow in that passing game?
I mean, you look at this offense, it's so difficult because they're willing to go wherever the offense or wherever the defense gives them that particular week. So I think it's a really challenging offense to invest into, and it's a week-to-week basis, right? So I think moving forward, you're not really looking at the Raiders offense unless you're absolutely desperate. And then at that point, you might as well throw out who you have. It could be a Zay Jones week, which nobody expected to say in week one of the season, right? But, I mean, how about Bryan Edwards just absolutely being a non-factor? It's been disappointing, you know, if we're going to speak from the dynasty context. It's been disappointing. He does find the end zone, but just 3 receptions that add up to 8 yards. It's not exactly what we thought we were going to get out of Bryan Edwards.
Yates, how likely are you to start Josh Jacobs in the next couple of weeks?
I mean, well, assuming that you moved on and that you had Josh Jacobs, so there's the big qualification. Assuming that you did move on and you have Josh Jacobs, I think he's one of these guys that is just a low-end RB2. Like, he's going to see volume, but the upside might not be there. This offense, yes, Las Vegas won the game, but again, 10 starters out for Cleveland throughout the entire roster. So it's one of the games where Las Vegas has been on a losing skid, and so they break that here, but the offense did nothing to indicate to me that they are suddenly now going to rebound and they're going to be a high-powered offense yet again. So this is a situation where Jacobs, you're playing because he has a high floor. He's going to see work. But outside of that, you need him to fall into the end zone to crack even the top 20.
Yeah, and I'm not really sure there's much to talk about at all with the Browns. I mean, obviously, Nick Chubb, you know, clear must-start RB1, 23 rushing attempts, 91 yards, and a touchdown. But I mean, in an offense being run by Nick Mullins, not being coached by Kyle Shanahan with Nick Mullins, I'm pretty much not going to have confidence in anybody. So, I mean, again, 48 receiving yards for Donovan Peoples-Jones, 29 for David Njoku, Higgins at 24. These aren't numbers that are going to stand out to you for any reason whatsoever. Is there any takeaway here for you, Matt, or can we just move on from this game from the Browns' perspective?
I got to tell you, I can't get off Donovan Peoples-Jones. I mean, you look at this as somebody who studies these guys coming out of college. This was a 5-star, super athletic guy coming into college, kind of gets wasted in the Michigan offense. And there's just these flashes of Donovan Peoples-Jones. You know, maybe this is a guy to track. Hopefully he's in a more high-octane offense down the road. But I think if you are stuck in a pinch where there's more COVID out and you need somebody in a flex spot in a deeper flex league, you can throw Donovan Peoples-Jones in there. There's no floor there. Very low floor, but there's ceiling. And I think if I'm remembering correctly, he actually had another big play that got called back on holding or something similar. So the stat line could have been even better. So that's about it. You know, if you want to get into the Cleveland passing attack, it's Donovan Peoples-Jones, and I wouldn't look much further.
Yates, how in are you on Donovan Peoples-Jones from a dynasty perspective?
Well, it's difficult because you've seen with Baker Mayfield and this the way that the Cleveland offense is structured that they don't lock onto one particular guy. So as far as consistency, it's not there, right? Jarvis Landry even has been up and down so far this season. So as we move into 2022 and beyond, I think that DPJ can be a fine, like, low-end flex option that's going to provide you some big boom weeks because of his ability to be open deep downfield and make contested catches. He's super athletic, like Matt mentioned, but the consistency probably isn't going to be there because some weeks he'll get 7 targets, some weeks he'll get 2. You know, it's just the way that the Cleveland offense is structured. So that's where if we had DPJ in a different offense, one that was a little bit more traditional with targeting the wide receivers at a heavier rate and not so focused on the run, then I would be more excited about Donovan Peoples-Jones. But because he is in Cleveland, that's one where I'll just say, you know what, I'll probably let someone else deal with the wide range of outcomes.
Vikings 17, Bears 9 in the second Monday night game this week. Dalvin Cook, again, just like, you know, Nick Chubb, 28 rushing attempts was just standout, but you're starting him regardless, no matter what, 89 yards, no touchdown. Justin Jefferson, obviously been one of the best receivers in fantasy all season long, and last year, since the day he came into the league, 10 targets, just 4 receptions, 47 yards, did have the touchdown. Obviously, we're not doubting him, you know, in any way. From a talent perspective, is there any concern about just the offense not being good enough to let him truly, you know, lead you to a fantasy championship this year, Matt?
I'm still all in on Justin Jefferson. I think the Bears secondary showed up. I know they had a lot of young guys, but they were playing well. And you saw there was a strong emphasis on Justin Jefferson. They were going all out. It's what led to that Emer Smith-Marset touchdown, right? Because they were double, triple focused on Justin Jefferson. And I think smart NFL defenses are going to do that. But I think you still have to roll Justin Jefferson out there with confidence. If you're in the semifinals, it's probably because of Justin Jefferson in large part, so you got to keep rolling with him.
Yeah, you're definitely starting him, so maybe it's not actionable advice. But are you concerned if, you know, Adam Thielen, when he's out, that the other teams are going to do this and just bracket Jefferson, go, you know, put all their defensive effort towards him, and that he won't be able to put up the fantasy numbers, even if he's having an outsized impact on the game still?
I think you always have to be conscious of that, right? One of the best things in fantasy football, whenever you're targeting, looking at players to draft, is there somebody else on the field that's going to draw that top coverage off of them. So I think you would be smart to proceed with a little bit of concern, right? Maybe not 100% confidence like you normally would go through with it.
I think that's fair. And then on the Bears side, Yates, you know, David Montgomery, 18 rushing attempts, 60 yards. Justin Fields, 26 of 39, 285 yards. And a touchdown. Cole Kmet having a nice little game, 6 receptions on 9 targets, 71 yards, no touchdown, of course. Is he somebody that you could see starting here through the last couple weeks of the season?
He's someone that I ranked in that like 15 to 20 range this past week at the tight end position. And that's kind of where he's been all year, where it's like he could, you know, be involved in the offense, or then another week he could completely just disappear, kind of like Donovan Peoples-Jones. So that's kind of where I think we need to just kind of view Cole Kmet. And if you are in that this point of your playoffs, you likely have a better option at the tight end position that you're rolling with other than Cole Kmet. So if you're desperate, if for some reason you have an injury at the tight end position, then you can look at Cole Kmet, but he's really one of the like low end streaming options.
And Matt, we're still starting Darnell Mooney, maybe not with like full 10 out of 10 confidence, but we're starting him, right?
Yeah, absolutely rolling Darnell Mooney out there. If you look at it, he was a large part of the targets that the offense was creating. I think they were looking first to him. And I think if you look at Cole Kmet's yards, it's a little manufactured in terms of who's getting the most. I think he had like 3 third and 25 checkdowns right last night, Cole Kmet did. And so if you look at downfield targets, it's really going Darnell Mooney's way. And I think Fields has shown a good early chemistry with Mooney as well. So I'm definitely in on him.
One guy that I actually did want to mention on the Vikings that I forgot to is KJ Osborne, particularly with Adam Thielen out. Yates, do you see him as a good boom or bust option? Obviously, he didn't boom, you know, last night, but do you see him as somebody that is worth maybe taking a flyer on here in the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, so it sounds like Adam Thielen is closer to returning, right? Because they didn't rule him out until like right before the start of the game Monday night. And that was one where we're like, okay, guys, like he hasn't practiced for the past 2 weeks. Like we know that he's not playing, but there was still some of that, like he's going to test it out in pregame warmups and stuff like that. So it sounds like he's getting close to returning. I could see a path for him to be back in week 16. So this conversation could be just irrelevant by the time that we get to week 16 and lineups have to be set. But with Osborne, I think we had viewed him kind of as this like mid-range wide receiver three, high upside because of the targets that he was seeing, particularly against Pittsburgh, you know, in week 14, and then here against Chicago. And again, this was a matchup where on paper, it looked like they were going to be able to throw all over Chicago. The secondary did show up. Some of these young guys came to play, but I think with Osborne, he's now falling into maybe the same kind of territory as Donovan Peoples-Jones, to go back to an earlier conversation, like boom or bust, and you don't know what you're going to get any given week. But again, with Adam Thielen sounding like he's close to returning, this could all be irrelevant.
And I didn't read the stat line. We don't need to get into it, but just to give it to the listeners, Kirk Cousins, 12 of 24, 87 passing yards, 2 touchdowns, and an interception. Guys, in addition to football, I am also a massive college hoops fan, and I will be extra invested in this season's games because I'm going to be trying to win some money with Prize Picks, one of our favorite daily fantasy apps. All you have to do is pick a handful of players and decide if they're going to go over or under their stat projections. That's the whole game. It's so easy. You can describe it in less than 5 seconds. That's how fast and simple it is. Prize Picks is one of the best ways to play because it's easy. Plus, the more players you pick, the more you win. The other part I love is getting to mix and match entries across multiple sports. For me, that means betting on Eric Ayala to bounce back from his slow start and lead Maryland basketball in scoring all season long. For you, it might mean betting on soccer, hockey, baseball, really any sport that you want. So use your knowledge of the entire sports landscape to win big. But whichever players you enter, enter them with Prize Picks, found on the App Store and Google Play. And right now, our listeners can use promo code GRIDIRON to receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. Again, that's promo code GRIDIRON to receive a 100% instant deposit match for up to $100. Matt, let's get into our Dynasty risers. I'll start with you. Give me your number 10 riser in Dynasty formats after this season.
Yeah, absolutely. So one guy that's really picking up hot right now, he's one of my favorite guys, and he's had a slow start to this this 2021 season, but I'm a big Gabriel Davis fan. He came out early on in his rookie year, 599 yards, 7 touchdowns. He finished as wide receiver 56, was essentially free this offseason, and he started off slow. Buffalo was not really intentionally targeting him, but he has heated up here over the last couple weeks. You're looking at week 13, he went 2 for 4 with a touchdown. Week 14, 5 for 8, 43 yards in that touchdown. And then in week 15, he had 2 touchdowns, 85 yards on 7 targets. He's somebody who's consistently shown with high target volume, he's going to find the end zone. For whatever reason, Buffalo ignored him early in the year. It looks like they're going back to him. If you look at potential opportunity, I think we can expect Emmanuel Sanders to most likely move on from the Buffalo Bills this offseason. And so he's somebody who I think is going to still be really cheap, essentially free. And we're talking double digits in dynasty startup drafts, but he has a high upside potential, somebody who can plug right into those flex spots into your league next year. So I was high on Gabriel Davis. I'm even higher on him right now. I mentioned despite having a slow start to the season, he's wide receiver 50 right now, and he was non-existent for half the season. So somebody with a nice upside there to potentially play into wide receiver 3 territory.
Yeah, he is somebody that I actually do own in my dynasty league, and I got for cheap. So I'm happy to see him on your list. But is there a reason that you can think of to attribute his non-usage early in the season? Because he seems like a talented guy. And like you said, he's produced every time he's gotten the opportunity. So I struggle to sort of put my finger on why they wouldn't have given him a bigger opportunity earlier.
Yeah, it's weird. You know, I'll tell you, if you look at his games, he has 4 games this season with at least 5 targets. In every single one of those games with 5 targets, he's found the end zone. So I don't know if it was a chemistry issue. I don't know if it was, you know, wanting to really highlight Emmanuel Sanders early in the season, right? They brought in this veteran. And Sanders has played well this season as well, right? He's kind of fallen off a little bit towards the end of the season. So maybe that's where that swap is. So, you know, it's a little bit of an interesting offense in terms of, you know, they do want to throw the ball a lot, but they have a good amount of options in that passing attack. You know, certainly with Stephon Diggs there, Emmanuel Sanders, Cole Beasley. So there's only so much left over. But I think as Sanders kind of weans off of that volume load, it's going to be Davis picking it right back up.
Yates, what sort of range do you have Davis in your dynasty formats?
Yeah, he's on that like wide receiver four range right now, but definitely does have the potential to rise as we get word that, you know, Emmanuel Sanders moves on, because I think that was the linchpin. That was the reason why Gabriel Davis was not seeing work, was that they signed the veteran, you know, receiver here, even after Gabriel Davis kind of showed out in his rookie season. And they signed the veteran receiver and he got the playing time over Gabriel Davis, and they would bring Davis on in the red zone still, like he would still see some work there. But I think that what we have seen here from Davis over his first 2 years, I put this out on Twitter yesterday, that Gabriel Davis in 30 career games has one less receiving touchdown than DJ Moore in 60 career games. Like, and they're different players, right? Like, they're different roles in offenses, but to go from literally half career games and Gabriel Davis has nearly as many, and the target, I mean, it's like 286 targets to, or receptions to like 84. Like, it is a drastic, drastic difference here. So Gabriel Davis can produce when he gets the opportunity. If we get word that Emmanuel Sanders is no longer with the Buffalo Bills next season, which I expect to be the case, then Gabriel Davis is going to skyrocket up rankings.
Yates, who's your number 10 dynasty riser?
Yeah, so I'm going to go to the quarterback position here. I'm going to go with Matthew Stafford, a guy that we had kind of talked about in Detroit as, okay, he's a fine fantasy option. Like, he's, you know, he's in a terrible offense here or there. He's got some receivers, but really just hasn't been able to put it all together from a fantasy perspective. He was more so of like a streaming option. And then as we saw him move over to LA and just absolutely take off with Sean McVay, with Cooper Kupp, obviously we know that storyline. And you know, guys like Robert Woods, they add OBJ, you've got Van Jefferson, like all these receiving options really have helped Matthew Stafford completely take off. And so if we are still looking at playing dynasty in the window of 2 to 3 years, then Matthew Stafford has to be in the top 15, top 12 conversation, because he's going to be there for the next 3 years minimum. You know, he's going to be there for several years. So Matthew Stafford was one that we had kind of, you know, we had questions about his future in Detroit. In LA, that is no longer, you know, a concern. He is someone that is absolutely a locked in starter into dynasty rosters at this point.
Yeah, one of the things with Stafford is just that the quarterback position is so deep that it's really hard to sort of break into that upper crust. So is there, do you sort of maybe think a cap on what his ceiling can be, especially in Dynasty, where I know you want to play in a smaller window, but there's just so many talented young quarterbacks in the league right now, entering the league, that it's just, again, it's hard for him to sort of break into that upper echelon.
You're absolutely correct that we look at the quarterbacks that are in that upper echelon, and that involves guys that do what? They run. They have mobility to their game. Josh Allen, Kyler Murray. We're going to see Justin Fields kind of ascend into that territory because of his age, because of his rushing ability. You know, Trevor Lawrence, hopefully he can get back into that range. Trey Lance, when he takes over here, you've still got several locked in starters here. And that's not even mentioning like Patrick Mahomes, you know. So these other guys that have that top five territory locked up, Stafford has to continue to throw a ridiculous touchdown rate and yardage to be able to compensate for that. So he probably won't push the top five, but I definitely think that he still is within the top 10 territory, because you have to balance the potential payoff, the upside of some of these younger guys, versus the proven production right now and what Stafford is doing.
Two other potential concerns that I might have with Stafford in Dynasty would be, number one, that while he's very tough, nobody doubts that, he does have a history of getting nicked up a lot, and he is getting older, so does the health stay there? And B, Cam Akers, when he returns, I mean, we know that Sean McVay, while he's this offensive genius, he does like to run the ball, and he runs it very effectively. When he gets that workhorse guy, and I know he's sort of used Daryl Henderson as a workhorse, but when he gets that uber-talented, like, this was the guy everybody thought was going to be a surefire RB1 this year, if he comes back healthy, do they maybe dial back a bit on a pass-heavy attack?
Potentially, but I think that even if you do see Cam Akers, you know, dominate a little bit more of the carry opportunities, and we see a little bit return to balance here, that's still going to open up touchdown opportunities, right? We know that this Rams offense is going to put up points. And so that's kind of where, as we look at some of the other offenses with, you know, like, let's use Trevor Lawrence as an example. Like, even if we see like a really solid coaching staff brought in this next year into Jacksonville with Urban Meyer's replacement, like, if we see that bring in, they rebuild around Trevor Lawrence and we start to see him take off, but is that Jacksonville Jaguars offense going to put up as many points as, you know, LA? Like, the answer is no. So I think that's where we have to kind of balance it. And we look at the scoring opportunities for the Rams offense. That's where I'll side with Matthew Stafford.
Matt, give me your number 9 dynasty riser.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I tried to have a mix here of guys that are going to come with high value and just good additions to your roster. And somebody that I think is just going to be a nice, you know, cheap addition to your roster is James Conner. I think most folks have left him for dead. Folks don't like second team or second contract running backs. And I agree that he's not going to be somebody who's going to come with high, you know, fantasy football price tag. But again, somebody you can probably stash later in the double digits of your fantasy rounds. You know, the term RB0 is thrown out there a lot, so we won't focus in on that too much. But if you're going to fade running backs early, adding James Conner to your roster as a depth piece, I think could be a really good idea. Let's look at his resurgence here. After most folks just left him for dead this past offseason, he's found the end zone in 7 of the last 8 weeks, and that includes 3 multi-touchdown games. And what's really exciting about Conner in the Arizona offense specifically, right, take him in the context of what that Cardinals offense wants to do, he's getting receiving work. He's gotten 33 targets this season. He's caught 31 of those targets, 334 yards and 2 touchdowns, right? And we're seeing him really kind of get the keys to that offense in that backfield. So I think he's somebody who, again, is going to fly under the radar because he doesn't have the hot name anymore. But we've seen him produce in Pittsburgh, and now we're seeing him produce in Arizona.
So I think Conner is somebody that obviously, I mean, clearly can have a high ceiling as we've seen this season. But I do worry about the floor, A, for touchdown regression, which I'm sure you knew I was going to ask because that's what we've been talking about with James Conner all season long. But B, on the, you know, work in the passing game, a lot of that has come with Chase Edmonds not on the field. So when he's back on the field, do they still view him as the guy they want to be throwing to out of the backfield?
Well, I think you've got to look at it in two ways. One, I think in general, as a fantasy football community, I think we've overvalued Chase Edmonds. And, you know, I think Edmonds has had some good opportunities, had some flashes. But for the most part, he hasn't been anybody who's consistently produced in his career, right? And so how much are they really going to go back to Chase Edmonds when Conner has consistently produced for them? And I think on top of that, right, you're looking at, you know, James Conner just being able, like showing, like I guess just being there more consistently, right? And so I think it's less of a reflection of Conner versus Edmonds, but really taking into account availability is really crucial, and having depth at the running back position I think is so crucial, we've seen for fantasy football purposes, right?
Now I know the listeners are hoping to win some of the cool gear we're giving away with the help of our friends at Pristine Auction, like the free signed Alvin Kamara jersey, but those aren't the only amazing deals over at Pristine Auction. They've got daily auctions with hundreds of items of cool swag that are perfect for any fan cave, for fans or managers of any player. They guarantee authenticity, and just as important, it's affordable. Most people think cool gear like this is beyond their means, but the truth is a lot of these items are much more affordable than you might think, including a full-sized Ed Reed helmet signed that is currently going for under $200 on the site right now. They've got tons more on the site where it's quick and free to register and also free to bid. So when you head to the site, enter Fantasy Pros, all one word, in the registration code field located at the top of the page. It's totally free. And when you use the code, you'll get a free $5 credit. So sign up at pristineauction.com today. Again, that's PristineAuction.com. Before we move on from that read, Matt, you're one of the rare fellow Ravens fans that is on the show with me. So I got to ask, how much would you spend on an Ed Reed helmet?
I think around here in the Baltimore area, that's pretty much invaluable. So
I would say, just as a quick aside, he is my favorite Raven of all time. Is he the same for you, or is anybody, I mean, Ray Lewis, somebody like that, top him?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I have an interesting affiliation with the Ravens. I did not grow up a Ravens fan, but I've been in the Baltimore area now for about 5 years. And I'll tell you, there are still plenty of jerseys of retired players that folks will still wear really consistently. And Ed Reed is there. Ray Lewis is there. So I'm a little bit more of a new era of Ravens fan. So I would probably be really in the Jackson ballpark. But, you know, in terms of guys that I just love and it doesn't necessarily, you know, come through yet in production, I love myself big play Devin Duvernay. And he's had some fun flashes this season as well.
Very, very nice. I will not bore anybody else's ears having to listen to us talk and wax poetic about the Ravens. Yates, give me your number 9 dynasty riser.
Yeah, I will say this really quickly. The only other person that I think liked Devin Duvernay more coming out of college than I did was Matt. So yes, absolutely love Devin Duvernay. All right, so number 9 dynasty riser for me is Joe Mixon. Mixon was someone who we had talked about at the beginning of the season, and I was kind of pounding the table for him, saying, like, don't bury this guy yet. Like, he is still only, what, 24 years old? Like, still going to see a ridiculous workload. This offense is going to be great. And so, but we had the public perception of Joe Mixon really being kind of down, where people just did not want to have him because of what happened in 2020, where we had Zach Taylor kind of keeping him out, where he had the foot injury and then wasn't placed on IR and was constantly this week-to-week situation where we just didn't know if we were going to have Joe Mixon, and that wore down fantasy managers by the end of the year. But really, really interesting, Joe Mixon is one of only six players in the top 20 running backs of pre-draft consensus ADP to play all of their team's games. So where we went from Joe Mixon being this injury-prone, you know, narrative and everything like that, he is one of only six players in the top 20 running backs of consensus ADP to begin the season where he has played all their team's games. Now, he's currently banged up a little bit. We don't know if he's going to play this next week. But I think with Joe Mixon, this is something where we had kind of him in the pushing the lower end of the top 15. And now I think he's back into this top 8 territory, top 5 territory, where we know that he's still young. We know that he's incredibly talented. And we know that he's going to see a ridiculous, ridiculous workload when he is on the field. So Joe Mixon is one of the guys that we have to talk as a dynasty riser.
I think it's a really good pick because he's a guy that so many people had felt burned by going into this season that they said, even if there's a lot of boxes that he checks, you know, workhorse guy in what should be a pretty good offense, gets work in the passing game, their top, you know, guy in the red zone, it, all these things that we want out of an RB1 that he was giving us, but so many people have been burned by him that they were like, no, I'm just done. I'm out on Joe Mixon, regardless of what the cost is. And he has been that RB1. So I think that's a good pick. I will just point out that three of his worst games of the season have come in the last 3 weeks. Right. And they've all looked pretty identical on the stat line. 19 rushing attempts for 54 yards, 18 for 58, 17 for 58. So, I mean, is there any concern for you, Yates, that maybe he's dropping off here a little to end the season, or you've seen enough already?
Yeah, I've seen enough already up to this point. I mean, when we have so many other running backs that are injured, so many other guys that are not seeing that, even 17, 18 carries, like, I will still take that. And I know that the talent level is still there for Mixon. So I don't know if he's ever going to be a top 5 dynasty running back just based on, you know, the lack of receiving work that we know that he can handle, but he's just not getting in this offense. So I don't know if he'll ever crack that top 5, but definitely someone that is worthy of being in the top 10 conversation for sure.
Matt, do you know where you would put him in your dynasty RB rankings?
That's a good question. I'm a known Joe Mixon fader. But, you know, you look at, we've hit a perfect storm, it looks like, with Joe Mixon, and he's coming in at running back 5 right now. So I think, you know, if you're going to take it into context, I think a low-end RB1, probably falling somewhere into RB 10 to 15 in most dynasty ranks this offseason.
Matt's drinking the Faderade on Joe Mixon. Matt, go ahead and give me your number 8 dynasty riser.
Yeah, we touched on him a little bit earlier, but I'm in on Darnell Mooney in this Chicago offense. And there's a few reasons. You look at what he's done in this offense this season. He has 36 targets over the last 4 weeks. I think that's really crucial because if you look at the type of player Darnell Mooney is early on in his rookie career, it was really just about stretching the field and making big plays. And those guys can be good for fantasy football, but they end up being a little bit more volatile, right? When you don't have that floor that comes with volume. And so we're seeing an extension of volume now as he's kind of transitioned into being the guy in the Chicago offense. He has 3 games this season with over 100 receiving yards, 8 games of 5-plus receptions. And then here's a key part, and I was talking about this a lot last night during Monday Night Football. You look at what the best organizations do with young quarterbacks. They put them on the field early in their career to get an idea, not of the quarterback itself, and his skill set in terms of performance, but really understanding what his skill set is and how you can build receivers around them, right? And I think it's clear that Darnell Mooney will be a centerpiece of this offense, but hopefully, whatever this new Chicago regime looks like, takes time to invest in another strong wide receiver piece, whether that's through the draft, whether that's through free agency. And ideally, if that strong addition to the offense can be pulling top coverage, similar to what we were talking about with that the Thielen Jefferson situation earlier, it really could open up the field for Darnell Mooney. And so I think he's somebody that you're right now, you're still proceeding with him as a low-end wide receiver 3, high-end wide receiver 4, but has so much higher of upside and ceiling to his game.
Obviously, we're all looking forward to seeing a new staff in Chicago. But just as a thought experiment, if there isn't any coaching change, if that wasn't happening, where would you have Mooney then? Would it have a large impact on how you view him in Dynasty?
Well, I think where he is at right now, he's proven the ability to do it with very little support around him. And I think what is encouraging is we're seeing that volume go up with Justin Fields, right? And so having that chemistry between a young quarterback and a young wide receiver, I think is really helpful as well. So even if worst case scenario, and Yates is going to wake up sweating in the middle of the night to think that this coaching staff and front office could stay, I still think that there's a lot to be excited about for Darnell Mooney. And the price isn't expensive. I know I picked up Darnell Mooney in one Dynasty League this offseason for a future second round Devy pick, which is, you know, like a fourth round rookie pick value. I mean, it was so cheap. There's folks that are just off Mooney. And so I think you can really invest in him without paying up.
Yeah, Yates, if you've recovered from the shiver sent down your spine, go ahead and give me your number 8 Dynasty riser.
I'll go with a guy that I stood on the table for coming out of USC in 2020, and really stood on the table for him in redraft leagues in 2020 that didn't necessarily come to fruition, but it has here in 2021. That's Michael Pittman Jr. Pittman was a guy that we really had questions about coming into this season, right? Is T.Y. Hilton going to be, you know, a factor? Is Paris Campbell going to dominate targets? And while that was a lot of the narrative, I was pointing to it and saying, Michael Pittman is the wide receiver one for this team. Like, it really isn't much of a question for me because of his skill set, because of how good he is and his talent. I knew that he was going to cement himself as the wide receiver one for this offense. So we saw him go from a guy that people really didn't even want to have on the roster, someone that had plenty of potential, but that we just didn't know if that was going to translate to production. A lot of it hinged on Carson Wentz, too. And we have seen that Pittman is the wide receiver one in this offense, and that he can be an extremely, extremely reliable option. Not necessarily coming with as high of a ceiling here lately as he did to begin the season, but still someone that I am extremely excited about moving forward.
Have you seen enough out of Carson Wentz, or have an expectation that the Colts are going to go in a different direction at quarterback to not be concerned about that element of it?
No, I think, it's hard to answer that based on Carson Wentz's most recent game and what we saw. But I do think that at this point, I've seen enough from Wentz to know that he can be the guy in Indianapolis moving forward, right? They're not going to move on from Wentz, especially after now they're going to surrender the first round pick for him. So I think with Wentz and Pittman, they are just going to continue to build upon the chemistry that they've, you know, developed here this year and moving forward. So knowing that we have the quarterback situation cemented, that kind of gives me a lot of faith too with Pittman moving forward.
Matt, give me your number 7 Dynasty riser.
Yeah, absolutely. Huge Pittman fan as well. So I love that we got to talk about him. I'm going to talk about Justin Herbert. Now, Justin Herbert was a guy that I loved coming out of college. I considered him to really be in that same top tier as Joe Burrow and Tua, and he has done nothing but produce for us. But I'm kind of taking this from the context of he's already a really high valuable guy, but I think he is a lock, a top 3 dynasty quarterback draft pick going into next year's drafts, and I think you can feel really comfortable doing that. You look over the last few weeks here, he has an 8 touchdown to 2 interception ratio over the last 3 weeks. 300-plus-yard games in the last 5 weeks. He has 6 games on the season with at least 3 touchdowns. 2 of those came with 4 touchdowns. On the season, he's 2nd in passing yards behind just Tom Brady, all right? Nothing to shake your head at. He's 3rd in passing touchdowns behind just Brady and Stafford. And then here's what's really key. He's 9th in rushing yards for quarterbacks, and he has 3 what I call bonus rushing touchdowns. And this is one of the things I talk about all the time when it comes to quarterbacks and their fantasy football value. A lot of the times when we think of a rushing quarterback, right, we think of Lamar Jackson or Kyler Murray or even Josh Allen to a degree. But there is a ton of value in the Dak Prescotts of the world, right? In guys like Justin Herbert that just get 5 or 6 rushing touchdowns a season. That is a huge fantasy bump, and they don't quite get labeled as mobile quarterbacks. So I was started off high on Justin Herbert. He's only risen higher. And I think if you're playing in a super flex league, I think he's going to be a first round dynasty startup pick this year. If not in a 1 quarterback league, I think he's a top 3 dynasty pick at the quarterback position specifically.
That's funny that you mentioned the super flex, because that was actually going to be the question I asked you, which is how many guys at any position are you drafting ahead of him in a dynasty super flex startup?
I mean, you know, obviously roster construction plays into it. I'm somebody in super flex leagues that does believe in building a quarterback foundation. So if I'm sitting there with picks 4, 5, 6, I'm probably seriously thinking about Justin Herbert. You know, I'm still a big Josh Allen fan, still a big Lamar Jackson fan. And so I think those are the quarterbacks in a super flex league that I would be comparing to Justin Herbert and trying to figure out which direction I would want to go down. But I think if you're sitting there at 5, 6, 7, he's a very realistic option for you.
Quickly to wrap up the Herbert conversation, what steps would you need to see him take to get him into that maybe number one quarterback in Dynasty conversation?
You know, I really think it comes down to being able to trust that offense fully, right? I think there's some pieces we really like. Austin Eckler has been fantastic. He's really helped balance out that run game. Keenan Allen has had a resurgence of a season, which is fantastic, but we have seen a little bit of volatility there. And then the question is Mike Williams coming back? Are they going to put somebody else there next to him? But I think it's less of a situation of what does Herbert have to do to get, you know, over Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson, and more of a situation where if I'm doing three dynasty startups, I'm probably drafting one of those guys in each league, right, and trying to spread my rostership out like that.
Now, in fantasy football, we do everything we possibly can to be prepared for any scenario, but sometimes the unexpected still happens, and when it happens in our game, we can chalk it up to bad luck and move on to the next week. But when emergency strikes in real life, that's the scary stuff, and it's why I want to make sure our listeners are fully prepared with Air Medcare Network. When medical emergencies inevitably pop up, Air Medcare Network gives members the absolute best possible air transport services to the nearest hospital with zero cost out of pocket. It's less than $100 a year to cover your entire family, and frankly, what wouldn't you pay for the peace of mind of knowing that no matter what happens, you are mere minutes away from the best possible care? Whether you're an adventurous family, always towing the line, or an indoors family who prefers to take it easy, emergencies can and will often find you. Be prepared with Air Medcare Network, who is currently offering our listeners a $50 gift card with your new membership. Just visit airmedcare.com/fantasypros and use offer code FANTASYPROS for the peace of mind no one should live without. Yates, give me your, I believe we're on number 7 Dynasty Risers.
Yeah, so we just talked about him. Matt mentioned in the Los Angeles Chargers offense. We're going to go with Austin Eckler. And Eckler is a really interesting player here because in years past, we had viewed him as having this very specific role. He was a PPR machine, right? A full PPR guy that was going to soak up targets out of the backfield, really not going to see a ton of work in the red zone. Rushing touchdowns, really not his thing. And that all shifted this year. And we look at 36 red zone carries on the year up to this point for Austin Eckler. In 2020, all of 2020, and he missed a few games, but in 2020, he had 18 red zone carries all of last year, 36 up to this point this season. So looking at the role here for Austin Eckler, we have to talk about him as a riser. Now, it's not necessarily a guy that moved, you know, skyrocketed up rankings because he was still a very, very valuable asset, but someone who the role has changed here for Eckler, and he is producing in a massive, massive way. So we have to talk about him as a dynasty riser, given what we've seen from this year.
Yeah, obviously been one of the best running backs in fantasy this whole season. I would just ask on Eckler, and I guess this is sort of also in Eckler slash Mixon slash any upper level running back conversation. I just sort of fundamentally in dynasty leagues, I like to build, if it's a super flex with quarterback, but through wide receiver, an elite tight end, the running back is sort of the last piece I like to fill because the shelf lives are just so short. Does that, what level of concern does that play for you with some of these elite running backs when you're talking about dynasty looking into the future? And again, I know you said a lot that you like to view dynasty in a much shorter window than most people do, but still running backs, I mean, Eckler's only in his mid-20s, but it can go like that.
Right. Yeah, I actually am the other way around, where I, in a one QB league, I prefer to build around the running back because the depth dries up so quickly. And I believe that there are guys that every single year in startup drafts and things like that, where we have the Michael Pittman Juniors, we have the Jalen Waddles, we have these younger wide receivers that are our values because the perception on them is, you know, is not correct. So I think with the running back position, that's one that I'm looking to build around early. I say that in a one QB league, in a dynasty startup, I'm walking out of the first four rounds with two running backs, most likely. And wherever that falls, you got to just kind of play it out with the value on the board. So with these guys, Eckler, I'm concerned about the increase of usage right in the red zone, the increase in carries because of his size. And I just don't know if he's going to be able to withstand that type of workload long term. But again, if we're playing in that window of 2 years, like, and especially talking about the risers, it's guys that we can definitely talk about their concern moving forward, but as far as what we had the perception of them last year into where we have them now, we have to talk about Eckler as a riser. As far as his level of concern moving forward, I'm a little bit concerned. I don't know if I'm going to have him as a top five guy next year in rankings or anything like that, but I definitely think that he's still going to be a valuable fantasy asset moving forward. So as far as the running back level, you know, concern and stuff like that, I really don't have that because we see all these guys get injured at the running back position. It's just a nature of the position. So I'm going to get the depth while I can.
Dynasty riser number six, Matt, who you got?
Yeah, now you're going to notice a trend here with some of my top guys. I think every offseason, right, we see folks really put a lot of emphasis on which tight end can I get value at, right? Because we know it's such a short position at the top. You just talked about it. A lot of folks like to build around the premium tight ends like Travis Kelce or George Kittle, Darren Waller. And so I think one of the guys that's going to get a lot of attention as folks kind of sit down and look at the course of the season, I think people are going to be excited about Hunter Henry. And I'm excited because he was somebody that I consistently was rooting for. I wanted him to work in LA, and it just never kind of quite fit. But if you look at what he's been able to do over this season, he's been incredibly efficient. 9 touchdowns on 58 targets. So 15% of the time the ball is thrown his way, it's going to be a touchdown. 22% of the time he catches the ball, it's going to be in the end zone. And I think that word is really important when you take into the context of the New England offense. It's efficient, right? Because you're not going to always get the most volume. You're not going to get the most targets. He has 2 touchdowns. He had 2 touchdowns, 77 yards, and 8 targets against Indianapolis on Thursday Night Football. We know fantasy football players always overvalue the primetime games where everybody gets to watch it and is tweeting about it and is putting discourse into it, right? But he does also have 2 multi-touchdown games this season. He scored in all but one game in between weeks 4 and 10. And remember, weeks 4 and 10, I feel like, was when Mac Jones' season was in full effect. So when Mac Jones was getting hyped, Hunter Henry was right there next to him. You know, I had a bet this offseason, a side bet, that I didn't think 2 New England tight ends could both be tight end ones, and I was worried about the Hunter Henry side because I thought Jonnu Smith was going to be locked in there, but it seems to be flipped here. It seems like at least in this first year of this 2 tight end experiment, it's Hunter Henry's game.
Are you concerned at all about Jonnu Smith being used in more creative ways next season and eating into that workload for Henry?
Yeah, I think we would be remiss to think that Bill Belichick, such a successful creative coach, paired up with Josh McDaniels, wouldn't spend the offseason figuring out how to get the most out of their heavy investment in Jonnu Smith. And remember, too, we talked a little bit about this when Fields and Mooney, young quarterback repertoire and chemistry is important, right? And having a full offseason again to work on that between Mac Jones and Jonnu Smith absolutely could help. However, who else is getting the targets, right? And who's getting the touchdowns in New England? That's a key part of things as well, because Jacoby Myers may be getting the targets, but he's not getting the touchdowns. And then if you look past that, there's nobody else really pulling volume out. And I don't see the Patriots investing in a top-tier wide receiver in the draft or really investing a ton more money into their wide receiver core this offseason. And so I think New England has what they want on the roster for the most part.
Yates, you famously feel quite passionately about the New England tight end situation. So please keep it short because we got to move on. But what are your takeaways from this season in a dynasty format for the 2 tight ends?
I think that, you know, with Jonnu, I don't know if we can, I just still think he's worth holding on to in dynasty formats, right? Because Matt mentioned it, like they invested so much in him. And yeah, a lot of it is for his blocking ability, but you have, like, this is still an incredibly athletic guy that you should be able to get involved in your offense. And we saw that even this past week where he had a couple of big plays and they were just called back due to holding penalties and stuff like that. So, but with Hunter Henry, he's going to live and die on touchdowns. That's kind of the thing. So I don't know if he's ever going to crack the top 10, but someone that definitely you can put in your lineup as a guy who can supercharge it with the touchdown ability. I definitely think that that's there to stay.
Yates, who's your next dynasty riser?
I'll stick at the tight end position. I'll go with Dawson Knox here. With Knox in Buffalo, this is a guy that we, coming into the NFL, famously in that loaded Ole Miss offense, really just was not involved a ton, but showed flashes of his athletic ability. And really, 52 combined receptions in his first 2 seasons, 44 receptions already here in 2021. And he had 5 combined touchdowns in his first 2 seasons. 8 so far this year. This guy has really become a focal point of the offense, with Buffalo not really going four wide. They're starting to get the tight end position involved in this offense, and that's leading to production for Dawson Knox. And long term, he's still involved in this dynamic and explosive offense. We know that Josh Allen is looking his way in the red zone. So Knox is one of the guys that really was completely off the dynasty radar. No one wanted Dawson Knox, but now this year, he's one of the guys that has skyrocketed up rankings because of his involvement in the red zone and what he can be long term.
Is there a path to him entering that upper, like, elite tier at the position, or do you think he'll sort of settle in at, with a ceiling of like a tier two tight end, which is still pretty good, obviously?
Yeah, I don't know if he's ever going to push that top tier unless we see something happen to one of the receivers above him on the depth chart, where then the target volume skyrockets, right? So I say like 44 receptions already this year, like that's great, but you still have the upper tier guys that are, you know, hauling in 80, 90 a year. You know, like that's really where I don't know if he's ever going to get to that. He's really made his hay on the touchdown production. And so that's something where, just kind of like with Hunter Henry, I don't know if that's ever going to vault him up rankings to that, you know, upper tier, but he's definitely someone that we have to talk about as a riser.
We're into the top five here. Matt, give me your number five dynasty riser.
Yeah, this is somebody who I think has consistently risen in value. He rose this offseason. I think he's going to continue to take a nice jump forward. He was my very, very close running back too in that 2020 draft class, and that's DeAndre Swift. I think he's a really sneaky value, in particular because of recency bias. We see this happen all the time. If players miss time at the end of a season related to injury or perform a little bit worse at the end of the season, they maintain a lower value throughout the offseason because fantasy football players remember the feeling that they left with that player for the roster last year, right? And so he's missed a couple weeks because of injury, and I think for folks that just will sort by total fantasy points, it'll push him down a little bit, but definitely still somebody that I would grab consistently in the second round in upcoming dynasty drafts this offseason. He's had some huge weeks. You look at week 10 against Pittsburgh, he had 33 carries, 130 yards. Week 11 against Cleveland, 136 yards on just 12 carries. He found the end zone in that game. He's running back 10 right now in points per game. But here's the key thing, and here's what everybody forgets about DeAndre Swift, because he is such a talented runner. He's so powerful. He's so clean. He's got great vision. But where DeAndre Swift comes through for fantasy football purposes, he's running back 4 right now in receptions. He is a key part of this receiving game. And obviously now the quarterback situation may change, may not change. It doesn't seem like Detroit is going to plan on making a quarterback change in this upcoming year's NFL draft, at least not one that would immediately replace Jared Goff. And so having Goff there helps DeAndre Swift's PPR value. But if you look at receptions per game this season, DeAndre Swift has 5.1. That leads all running backs in the league in receptions per game. So there's a lot to like about DeAndre Swift, and I think you'll be able to scoop him up potentially at a little bit of a value.
I have zero faith whatsoever about the quarterback situation being improved next season, whether it is Jared Goff coming back or them looking elsewhere. I just don't expect it to get better. It hasn't mattered this year. Do you think he is truly like quarterback proof?
Well, you know, I think that's kind of a tricky term, but if you look at what the Lions are doing, it looks like they are set to invest in a long-term rebuild, right? And so what that means, and they've kind of already, you know, shown this in their actions, they're going to invest in the offensive line. That offensive line unit is great. They're going to invest in the defense, right? That's going to help them slow games down and be able to focus more on the running game. So I think the overall roster build will help DeAndre Swift. I think for the most part, because he has that check down ability, he can help be quarterback proof, because quarterbacks that struggle oftentimes can over rely on that check down option. So it might not mean as many yards every time he catches the ball, but it could mean more targets. And we know in PPR leagues, just catching the ball is really helpful, right? And so it's not even always about what you do after the catch, but Swift has shown the ability to be successful after the catch. So QB proof is tricky, but I think Swift is probably as close as you can get to it.
Yates, give me your number five dynasty riser.
It's actually really funny because the next guy on my list is DeAndre Swift. And so talking about him and taking a little bit of a different angle, because with Swift, we had major question marks about what this offense was going to look like coming into this year, right? With Jared Goff, with I mean, no receiving weapons around him. Like, I liked Amon-Ra St. Brown coming into the year and coming out of college, but we didn't expect him to necessarily step onto the field and dominate targets right away. It was TJ Hawkinson and it was DeAndre Swift as the main guys in this offense. So we knew that this team wasn't going to be very good. We didn't know what that would mean for fantasy football, and it just does not matter because DeAndre Swift has continued to just dominate. So this is one of the guys that we had really high coming into the NFL. Based on his rookie season, he kind of stayed in that range. Then with the question marks about the team coming into 2021, we downgraded him slightly, but he's now right back up where he was because I don't know if I would call him QB proof, but definitely one of the guys that you feel extremely confident building around.
And of course, just 22 years old, he will play next season, the entirety of next season at 23. So still a very young guy with a ton of upside, even though we've seen him already start to produce. Matt, give me your dynasty riser number 4.
Now, I've been pretty good up to this point, but you know my main focus is on evaluating rookies and upcoming college prospects, so you know, there's going to be a high emphasis on this 2021 draft class here at the back end of my risers list. But starting off here at number 4, it's got to be Pat Freiermuth. I think that he has really shown a lot. You know, he was somebody coming out of college, he showed athleticism, he showed great handwork, but I wasn't convinced that in the Pittsburgh offense, he was necessarily going to get the volume that allowed him. I thought they were going to really want him to put his hand in the dirt, you know, and be a blocker. And they certainly have, and he's translated well in both ways for the tight end position. But if you look at his production for fantasy football, he's got 3 touchdowns in the last 5 games. He's got at least 4 targets in all but one game since week 6. That's a really good floor for the tight end position. He has 4 games this season with at least 7 targets. He's 11th among all tight ends in receptions. He has just 9 less receptions than Kyle Pitts, which, you know, I think it's important to understand the value that folks paid for Kyle Pitts versus what they paid for Pat Freiermuth, and to see just a difference of 9 in receptions given their profiles, I think is really impressive towards Freiermuth. It's not a knock on Pitts. It's impressive towards Freiermuth. And I know what a lot of folks are probably thinking as I'm laying this out. Well, what's going to happen with Big Ben? What's going to happen with the volume of this offense, right? Are they going to continue to throw the ball a lot? I think there's 2 factors that I'm looking at when anticipating as best as I can what the Pittsburgh offense is going to look like next year. I think they're going to go the veteran quarterback route, right? And I think that's going to help Freiermuth because I think it'll be less of an adjustment. The other side of that is that I do think there's still a pretty good shot that Juju leaves, right? And so that creates some opportunity, some volume. I know James Washington throughout the season, there was unrest there. So we're certainly going to see more Deontay Johnson. We're certainly going to see Claypool moving forward. But I think Pat Freiermuth could easily settle in, I'm going to say, as option number 4 in the passing game. Because remember, Najee Harris is really option probably 3 in the passing game, if not 2.
Yeah, and you touched on it there, but I would say that while I have no faith in the Lions improving their quarterback position next year, I do have faith in an organization like the Steelers to figure out something, especially because they are in win now mode with the rest of their roster, that I do think they're going to target a veteran, somebody who can really improve upon what we've gotten from Big Ben this year. So I totally agree with you there. Yates, number 4 dynasty riser, who you got?
Yeah, I'll fly through this one because we're getting low on time. So I will go with Deebo Samuel, someone who we had major question marks about coming into the year. Is it Brandon Ayuk as the wide receiver 1 in this offense? And we knew that George Kittle was going to be target number 1. But Deebo Samuel was someone that in my pre-draft rankings, I think I had like outside the top 30 wide receivers just because he had that famously low A-dot in 2020, I think like 2.6 yards or something like that. It was ridiculous, the role that he was being utilized in, and then injury concerns. And so we had major question marks about Deebo Samuel, and now he has been just a league winner this year. And so if you continue to hold on to Deebo Samuel, he's been a guy that has definitely paid off. And I think in dynasty leagues, I have question marks about his usage moving forward. Like, is he going to continue to be a running back primarily? Are they going to move him back to a wide receiver? Like, what does the future hold for him? But as far as someone who we have to talk about and identify these risers from the beginning of 2021 to now, Deebo Samuel has to be near the top of the list.
It turns out the key to trusting a Shanahan running back is to put a wide receiver back.
There we go.
Matt, who's your number 3 dynasty riser?
All right, coming in at number 3 is Javonte Williams. And I put him at 3 really intentional because I think for a lot of folks, he may be number 1. Now, he's certainly risen a lot in value over this season, but I'm pumping the brakes just a little bit relative to most folks on Javonte Williams. He's currently coming in as running back 13. He has 3 touchdowns on 170 carries, but he does have 38 receptions and 3 touchdowns through the air. And we just talked about how crucial that can be. But I'm in the ballpark of we can't currently value a Javonte Williams as if Melvin Gordon is automatically leaving this team, because Melvin Gordon is running back 17 on the season. He has 769 rushing yards. He has 7 touchdowns, so 4 more than Javonte Williams on the ground. He also has 23 receptions for 174 yards and 2 touchdowns. This Denver offense is going to look completely different. Another offense that may invest in a veteran quarterback. They have a ton of receiving options, and you have to think they're trying to get a quarterback in there that can better highlight their receiving options as opposed to just the running game. So I think there's a lot of factors that folks aren't accounting for, but Javonte Williams absolutely passes the eye test. He looks more explosive and like he has a more consistent vision than I saw coming out of college. So I think Javonte Williams is a big riser, but I would caution folks on overpaying or throwing your whole roster or a ton of draft picks to get Javonte Williams.
Yeah, just quickly, but I think this is an important person to talk about. What would you say, just gut reaction, your difference in ranking would be with Gordon coming back or without? Like, how many spots do you think that actually matters?
Yeah, right now, so on my rookie big board with the 2021 prospects, Javonte Williams has risen to be about a mid to late first round value from this past year's draft class. So you can see I'm still proceeding with a little bit of caution relative to probably where most folks had him. If Melvin Gordon is gone, I do expect that they'll still add some veteran running back to balance out Javonte Williams. It seems like that they don't want to give him all of the work, but I think, you know, if Gordon is back, Javonte Williams is a low-end running back 1 to middle running back 2. Think if Melvin, that's if Gordon comes back. If Gordon is gone, I think you're going to see Javonte Williams drafted as running back 5, 6, 7 overall, right? I don't know if I'm going to be willing to pay that price. I think we're going to have to feel out the market, but I do think that's where he's going to go.
Yates, who's your number 3?
I'll go with Leonard Fournette. This is another guy who we had question marks about this backfield and what this was going to look like coming into 2021. I thought it was going to be Ronald Jones as the guy who was, you look at the previous statistics from 2020, I mean, it wasn't even close as far as efficiency and who the better runner was. It was Ronald Jones. And then we started to see Leonard Fournette in the playoffs, obviously, get his footing, take over the job. But I think with coming out of the offseason, Leonard Fournette completely took over this backfield and has just cemented himself as a locked-in RB1. And so we have question marks again about the future. What does it hold? Is he going to be back in Tampa Bay next year? But as far as someone that we had major question marks about to begin the season, and then now, I mean, it's Leonard Fournette.
Yeah, gets all the passing work, gets all the work in the red zone, plays in an elite offense. It's hard to imagine a guy being much more valuable than that. Matt, who's your number 2 dynasty riser?
I'm going to go back to the tight end position here, touch on Mark Andrews. I think we're going to see the return of Mark Andrews as a top tier tight end option here. I think he's going to be right in there with Kittle and Waller this offseason, just behind Kelsey. 8 targets in each of the last 7 games, 10 plus targets in 3 of the last 4 games, 4 touchdowns in the last 3 weeks, 2 multi-touchdown games. I think we're really seeing here, by the way, 85 receptions on the season is 21 more than his previous career high. Still 3 weeks to go in the season. So I think we saw a little bit of regression in value from Mark Andrews coming into this season. He's going to be right back up there as Waller and Kittle have missed time.
Yeah, I think Mark Andrews, I think you can make a case for him to maybe even be the number 1 tight end going into next year. I'm not saying he definitely will be or maybe even should be, but Kelsey's getting older. George Kittle has the injury histories. Darren Waller's had a disappointing year. I'm a Ravens fan. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons why we should really consider him as tight end 1 maybe going forward. Yates, who's your number 2 dynasty riser?
Guys, I will make this super quick. It's Cooper Kupp. Like, we have to talk about Cooper Kupp as a guy that we had major question marks again about just what this offense was going to look like. We knew that he was going to be good, but he still had injury history. He was still someone that we just didn't know what we were going to get. And I mean, like, I really don't need to explain it that much more. Cooper Kupp's been phenomenal. He's going to continue to be phenomenal as long as Matthew Stafford is in town. So yeah, I will make that one quick.
Yeah, Kupp's probably the easiest guy to put on this list ever just because he's been unbelievable. I actually love that it worked out this way because you guys both have the same number 1, and that is a guy that I've heard Yates talk a lot about already. So, Matt, I'll let you start here. Jalen Waddle.
Man, I love talking rookies with Yates because we click on the right guy. So I'm glad we're on the same page here. It's Jalen Waddle. He was my wide receiver 2 coming into this year's draft class, and he has absolutely hit that mark. If you look at what he's done, it's been super impressive for me. So right now he's PPR wide receiver 18 on the season, And he has had to work through almost every challenge in that Miami offense to be an immediate mid-range wide receiver two for fantasy football. The sky is the ceiling. He's 12th in targets with 115, and that is just through 13 games. He's 7th in reception percentage of all wide receivers with at least 50 targets. He's caught 74.8% of his targets. Week 12, he was 9 for 10 with 137 yards and a touchdown. Week 13, he was 9 for 11 with 90 yards. If you do out the splits between when he had Tua and when he didn't, he clicks so much better when he has Tua. They're building around this offense. Miami is going to invest in the offensive line and the run game this offseason to create a more balanced offense, help feed the RPO-style approach from Tua. The sky is the ceiling for Jalen Waddle. I have him everywhere, so I can't really add him on any rosters, but if I could, I would.
Yates, I know you don't need me to set you up with a question to shower Waddle with praise, so please, the floor is yours.
Yes, he was my wide receiver too coming into the year as well, and that has definitely paid off, right? We kind of questioned, okay, is he going to have the Justin Jefferson type breakout of 2021? And I think that we can say, maybe not to the same degree, but as far as someone who has been just performing way better than we expected, Jalen Waddle is that guy. So I didn't want to include a ton of rookies on here just because they're, you know, we just really don't know where these guys are going to land and in rankings and dynasty rankings coming into the year. But this, we had to talk about Waddle as a riser because people loved him coming into the year and they love him even more now. Like, it is just unanimous, the love for Jalen Waddle in the fantasy football community. So absolutely had to talk about him.
Yeah, real quick, don't even give me an explanation, but I want both of you to just fill in the blank. In dynasty formats, Jalen Waddle should be ranked as wide receiver what? And Matt, I'll start with you. Just give me the answer.
I think he's a wide receiver one, low-end wide receiver one coming into next year. So I'll say wide receiver 12.
And Yates?
That's funny. Wide receiver 12 was the exact number that came to my mind.
You guys are in lock. Steph, before we wrap up this episode, it is time for very quickly Yates' favorite segment. I'm actually not going to do a holiday theme this week because I feel like we've gotten enough of that in recent weeks, even though it actually is, you know, Christmas week here. So I'm going to ask you, who is your favorite side character in any sitcom?
John Ralphio. I know that people absolutely hate John Ralphio from Parks and Rec, but every single line that he says, anytime that he is on the show, I am dying laughing. If I'm in a bad mood, I can just go to YouTube and I can type in like the best of John Ralphio and just watch that. I'm in an instantly better mood.
Yeah, I think maybe a top five bit in the history of that show is when he was doing all the raps and he kept getting the rhyme right and then going one word too far. It killed me every single time it happened. Matt, I don't know how big of a sitcom fan you are, but please feel free to weigh in with your favorite side character.
Oh, yeah. And me and Yates line up on sitcoms as well. And I would say my favorite John Ralphio scene is the very last episode where he fakes his own death and then they catch him. This is fantastic. But I think, you know, I have my sitcom rotation. I'm on New Girl right now. And so I got to give a shout out to Winston. He's absolutely fantastic. Winston and Ferguson. I mean, they really helped make that show. He's just hilarious.
Nice, nice. Great pick. I would say for me, just sticking with fantasy football theme, I'll go with Rafi from The League. Definitely a lot cruder of a character than the sitcoms you guys picked, but he's a 100%er. 100% of the lines that he says make me laugh. I think he's hysterical.
I don't know. I forget the actor's name, but like every single show that he is in, he plays the exact same character, like the exact same energy, like everything. Yes. Brooklyn Nine-Nine to like everything. He's
the Good
same,
Place.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. The same type of character.
Jason Mantzoukas is his name. There we go. He's hysterical. Yes. And he comes up with most of those lines on his own. He's
I'm sure he does.
Improv.
Yeah.
Comedian. I will also give a quick shout out to Newman from Seinfeld because I know that our bosses would get mad at me if I didn't mention Seinfeld. Thank you guys both for indulging me, and also thank you both for what I thought was a really great episode. I thought there was a ton of awesome information there, so I'm hoping everybody who listened feels the same way. Please, everybody, remember all the awesome opportunities we mentioned, including Prize Picks, Air Medcare, and Pristine Auction. Most of all, thank you to the fans for listening. For Yates and Matt, I'm Ryan Warmly. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros. We'll be right back.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without fingersticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
Carol G.
Juan Gabriel.
Christina Aguilera.
What do these three have in common?
You mean apart from impeccable style, chart-topping canciones, and drama?
Facts, yes, all of the above are correct, but most importantly, they're some of the biggest Latin icons in the world. And they're just a few of the game-changing Latin stars we're covering in Becoming an Icon Season 2. Listen to Becoming an Icon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.